Hello, everyone. This is Shane Perry. I'm filling in for Michael Henry tonight. And tonight is Module 8, where we're going to be going over leading the public relations function. Once again, this is a interactive experience, so we need you to post in the comment area. Shows that you can sign in. Name a leadership skill you've explored in the last year, or you read about, or something you would like to develop. Hey, Joy, see that you're up. Pensacola is up. Mentoring, consensus building. You know, I've seen a lot of people talking about mentoring recently, especially now that April is APR month. So I believe Jessamy was just talking about that as well. Decision making, that is a great one. Okay. So we have a number of attendees on tonight. We're going to be going over leading the public relations function. This is 18% of your of the KSAs that you'll be getting on the exam. We go over everything from leadership, business literacy, organizational structures, resource management, and problem solving and decision making. And with me tonight, we have Amara Palacios. Is that how you say it, Amara?
Palacios,
and Karen Kolb. These are two APRs are joining us tonight to discuss the leadership function of PR. And Amara, I believe you were talking the other night. We have Karen. This is her first time. Karen, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your APR process?
Absolutely. And welcome, everybody. I actually work at Yale University. I have been working in public relations for probably about 30 years, should I say, probably about 28 years. And I actually got my APR accreditation back 4 years ago. Why did I finally do this? It was a matter of recognizing the field I'm in that I love so much and realizing it would sort of take me to the next step. I had actually also worked with, for a number of years, accountants. And I realized the only other thing that accountants have that they can do besides getting a master's or another degree is a CPA. For me, when I explained to a non-PR person, you know, why did I get my APR, I explained the difference of, well, it's sort of similar to a CPA because there's not many professions that you can be specialized in and have accreditation in that shows your commitment and expertise in the field. So that's why that was very important to me. Study tips, practice. Understand these concepts rather than memorizing random facts and dates and information like that. The KSAs are very important, as Shay mentioned earlier, 18% of this module that we're doing tonight will be a part of the examination. Learning what the overall concept, as I just said, learning the different areas. There's certain books that, from the bookshelf that I found particularly helpful. Effective public relations was one, and public relations strategies and tactics were probably my two go-to books. And then obviously, the reason why we're on the call, this course, learning from your peers, that is extremely important. Did I pass my exam the first time? No. Did I pass it the second time? Yes. And I think in part the reason why I had mentioned not necessarily that, you know, that rote memorization, that's where I basically failed the first time. So I passed that along to understand and to learn what you know best and what you do. The areas that you may not be as strong in, focus on those. Go back to the KSAs to see that you're spending enough time in the areas that you should be. And then sit down, apply yourself, and make sure it's a night you get a good night's sleep and all the other basic things that we kind of know and learn and sometimes we forget, but are very important.
All right. Thank you, Karen.
You're welcome.
So one of the things we're going to be starting with tonight, we are going to be going into some of the scenario practice questions. And do we have Mike? Is he online tonight? Mike, if you can chime in on the window. What we're going to be doing is a really good study tip is practice with some of these type of questions, writing your own questions, providing questions for us to test ourselves with. But it helps you to focus on the reading, helps you to understand how the questions are structured, and it will help you with your APR examination strategies as well. So again, so what we're going to do is you're going to listen to the scenario, consider the KSA. We already know what this KSA is, but when you're taking the exam, you don't know what the KSA is. So you're going to use a little bit more of a critical eye on that. And usually a lot of the answers are all going to be correct, so you need to respond with the best practice. And then we're going to be discussing the content and the format of the question. All right, I did not see Mike chiming in at all. Jessamy, would you be willing to read? Oh, I don't have a mic option. All right, thanks, Mike. So
I can read it. Sure.
All right, fantastic.
You are a public relations specialist for a publicly traded international clothing company tasked with writing the earnings press release to accompany the annual report of the fiscal year that ended last week. As you're working on your release, your boss brings you a report detailing an issue with one of your major suppliers in Europe. The report says that major structural deficiencies have been found in the supplier's manufacturing plant. The building was shut down immediately and will have to remain closed for at least 6 months. How do you handle this information? Pick two. A, don't mention it in your earnings press release since you are addressing the year that just ended. B, include a brief analysis of this issue in your earnings press release, providing a framework for how it will be addressed in the MD&A. C, include this issue as part of a SWOT analysis in your earnings press release. D, recommend to your boss that your company send out a news release that day specifically addressing the issue with the supplier and the impact that the plant closure is expected to have on your company.
All right. If everybody can start putting in their answers, and it looks like we got quite a few people that are all putting in D, but going between A and B. This is interesting. Another moment here. All right. So the answer we have is B and D. Include a brief analysis of this issue in your earnings press release, providing a framework for how it will be addressed in the MD&A, and recommend to your boss of the company send out a news release that day specifically addressing the issue with the supplier and the impact the plant closure is expected to have on your company. That was a tricky one. Jessamy, could you read the rationale on this?
Sure. Let's see. This is from Strategies and Tactics, page 319. Timely disclosure is essential. A company must act promptly within minutes or a few hours to dispel or confirm rumors that result in unusual market activity or market variations. This is from the earnings press release guidelines that we got as part of our handouts. The most significant factors affecting the enterprise's results for the period will appear in both the earnings press release as well as management's discussion and analysis, the MD&A, filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Some enterprises use earnings press releases as a framework for the more detailed analysis in MD&A, a best practice.
Okay. And you know, a number of people put in A. So usually when you're drafting up your questions and you're doing your rationale, it would be great to actually also have what makes an answer incorrect. So why would A or C not be a best choice? So when you're designing your questions, that's something that you should really consider having as part of your question format. Amira, Karen, any insight you'd like to add on this one?
I think for, I think we've seen a number of public figures actually go to prison for not doing full disclosures. And unless you want to end up in an orange jumpsuit, disclosure is always ethically the best thing to do. I think the tricky thing about this particular question was A does sound like it's your gut, right? You kind of want to choose A. But as with a lot of the APR examination questions, you have to choose the best of what is what's in front of you. Not necessarily, you have to kind of, discern what is the most right out of what's in front of you and what is based off of the KSAs and what's best practice. Not necessarily what in your own personal experience is the most right thing to do, but what's best practice.
I'd second that. I'd say not only what is the best answer, a lot of times you can immediately eliminate one, and then you're down to your three possible answers. And usually two, you could say, well, this one or this one, they're both. But I guess the answer that would stay be applicable in, for lack of a better phrase, in all situations rather than, well, I could do that sometimes. That's probably what the best answer would be, what's your gut and what would be in most or all situations. These really aren't trick questions on the exam. They're pretty straightforward, and it's a matter of figuring out, yes, this is the correct one for in all situations. Not just, oh, well, I might do this or I've done that in the past, but kind of go with your gut.
All right, excellent. We're going to go right into the module notes. The notes are a little lengthy, but Jessamy is going to be trying to get through a lot of these. We have a lot more notes than we can possibly get through during this time. So these slides are available later that people can have a copy of.
Are we ready?
We're ready. Do you want me to drive and you just tell me next slide?
I'll go ahead and drive.
Okay, go ahead.
Excellent. So yeah, I did get a little carried away with the notes, everybody. And so I'll go ahead and we'll skip about half the slides. And I encourage you to just go ahead and download them, maybe make flashcards and study it on your own. And so this is a really dense topic. There's a lot of weird, obscure laws and rules and stuff to get through. So let's get started. So I just, when I first started doing this, I wanted to study this topic because I've never had a leadership role, and so I wanted to make sure that I studied it really well. And I was encouraged by my mentor to kind of step back and remember that the reason why, among the reasons why accreditation is so important to us as an industry is that we're trying to make the business case for public relations. And so to that end, it's important for PR professionals to be business literate so that we can be considered a part of the organization's top leadership. It's important to remember that all our public relations activities should map back to our organizational mission and our goals. And the way to be considered part of top management is to make sure that we're speaking their language and we're using their terms. And that way, they're more likely to take our counsel and advice seriously. Moving on. So to get a seat at the table, the book calls this the Dominant Coalition. I just refer to it as the CEO's Cabinet. There's a whole host of skills that we need to call upon in order to make sure that we're able to offer candid assessments of the projects and programs and people that are involved in it. There's crackling going on. It's important for us to be able to identify vulnerabilities and offer options and advice to help our organizations mitigate problems and to take advantage of opportunities that await us. So it's just important that we remember that when we're leaders, it's all part of making sure that we are making ourselves available to be strategic. I forgot to move the slide. There we go. I've also been told that it's really important for the desk to know the difference between staff function and line function. So the staff management function provides advice, counsel, and support to line management. Certain staff functions are PR, legal, finance, HR. Our line management coworkers are responsible for setting policy and making decisions about operations and organizational behavior, sales, marketing, production, most of the time. However, the line is kind of blurred, right? Because PR is often called upon to make decisions that are involved in setting policy and making decisions for the organization. So it's just important that we are making the case that other managers see PR as part of the main line of the business, the main function of the business, as we kind of work our way into this sort of gray area of between line management and staff management. But that's another reason why our outcomes need to be, our objectives need to be outcome-based, that we need to make sure that we're showing these other managers that what we do results in a measurable change. It's not just making things pretty or look pretty or sound pretty. It actually can affect the bottom line. To that end, it's important that we are able to show that we can keep track of money, we can keep the project on time and on budget. One thing that I've been advised is to remember to keep track of the budget throughout the whole project and not just kind of wait till the end. No managers like surprises. No CEO wants to find out that you're way off budget at the very end, but also being sure that we're showing the finance people how the money that we've spent is actually related to the outcome. We did this and we got this. We spent this amount of money and we got this. So this is the part where we're going to skip ahead. So just pretend that we went through SWOT, we went through solving problems, we went through how businesses are organized. I'm going to go straight to SEC, if I can get there. Here we go. Just wanted to touch on Regulation FD, which requires that publicly traded companies have to disclose material information to everybody at the same time. Again, that's about disclosure and being fair. Material information is anything that could cause someone to make a decision on whether they're going to buy or sell stock. So it means you can't give a scoop to just one reporter. You have to give everybody the information at the same time. Okay. And then touching briefly on some of these reports that we may be called upon to either read or help prepare. Form 8K is the current report. You file 4 days after if something happens that's important to investors that you need to notify them, something like if the director leaves, the CEO resigns, there's a bankruptcy, you got 4 days from that. The 10K is the annual report. And this is critical for us to be able to remember. I spent some time just Googling and seeing if I can find some of these so that I could understand that. The main point here is to remember to read the footnotes, to read, look at the exhibits, and read the management's discussion and analysis, and the MD&A, a lot of hidden gems in there about your company and also your competitors, your suppliers, that kind of thing is important. And then finally, the 10Q, easy to remember because it's the quarterly report. And that information, by the way, is not official. It's unaudited. This is one of my favorite things because we all remember the Enron scandal where the company, and so they Congress hit back and required the CEO and CEO now have to sign off to say that they have actually read it, that they understand it, and they can certify that the report is accurate and complete. So the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, which is also called SOX, is what is important there. Oh, we're going to skip ahead. How am I doing on time?
You're doing fine.
Excellent. So just wanted to touch briefly here at the end about things that I found confusing, that the quiet period is different than a blackout. It is different than the gag period. So the quiet period limits the information that the company can release to the public during a specific time. You can't file for an offering and then announce something positive that would drive your stock up, drive the stock price up way ahead of the offering. That would be illegal. So it just says that you're limited with what you can tell the public. And then a gag period is an embargo on certain promotional publicity. You can't make written statements on future sales or earnings during a certain period, which I've kind of listed there. And all of this is totally separate from a blackout. Some of you, if you have retirement plans and they make a change to the retirement plan, then there's a period where you can't go in there and make changes to your own account. That would be an example of a blackout. So I put those on flashcards so I could remember what that was. So anyway, I thought in the interest of time, it's been 10 minutes, I would go ahead and give enough time for the panel presentation. But I'm hoping that this was helpful to you all, and feel free to download the slides and study them later, and or give me an email if you have any questions about what I've written. Thanks, everybody.
Excellent. Thank you, Jessamy. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to move ahead on some of these slides. There we go.
This is very thorough, and I really appreciate the attention to detail with a lot of these things. Sometimes as practitioner, knowing these very key aspects of, you know, how businesses are organized and these very technical things, when you are sometimes the sole practitioner in the room, showing that you know these things builds your credibility, and you can also act as kind of the conscience of your organization ethically in helping them navigate stormy waters. So it's very important to know this kind of stuff. So I really appreciate the detail.
I agree, and I also like the way that you actually started off your presentation by saying you were not in management, so the reason why you did this was because you wanted to learn more about it, and that's actually how I find, you know, you actually learn more, and you learn the details that are probably the most essential. When you mentioned line management and the key functions, excellent.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. So we also have Casey Escobar. She's going to be providing her case problem response for her panel presentation. Casey, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me okay?
Can hear you. Fantastic. All right. Would you like to drive?
Sure.
Excellent.
Okay, so I am presenting today. It got a little bit cut off, but it's supposed to say a biotechnology company that is launching this oxalate-reducing enzyme product. And I know there's been a little bit of confusion in weeks past about whether the problem statement or situation analysis comes first. I decided to start with our problem statement here. So this case study is about researchers with a Gainesville, Florida biotechnology company who developed a solution that is intended to help sufferers of calcium oxalate kidney stones. It's called Nafure is the name of the product, and it's the first and only enzyme product of its kind that can reduce oxalate in the diet, which is the culprit behind that stone formation. And as they were facing pressure from investors, the company targeted a September 2017 date for commercialization to start selling the product to consumers so they could sustain adequate funding. And our team, Curley and Penn, a PR agency here in Orlando, was engaged at the end of June of last year with just 4 months to help their team develop and implement a PR plan and messaging platform for the product launch. So our situation analysis, some internal factors. I added more than less information on these slides, knowing that everyone could download them later. So I'll sort of breeze through these and just hit the high points. This CapDesign is the name of the biotechnology company. They're still considered a startup with limited funding and resources. And their mission was to empower people to achieve an ideal lifestyle free from health limitations. One of the challenges that we faced was the complexity of their company structure. So CapDesign is the research and development arm, and then they created a subsidiary named Entering to support marketing and sales of the product, and Nafure is the first of their products. Their team at the time included 15 employees. Most of them were those line functions that we were just talking about in the notes. And they recently hired a director of marketing who has an extensive background in PR and marketing for biotech companies. And he also happened to be accredited, which helped us out quite a bit. His team included one marketing manager and one communications specialist who joined later on in the year. And we did a quick audit of their current communications channels just to find out where they existed, and they had some email marketing, a blog, and a website that were pretty popular, and a small presence on social media. I thought it would be important to note that they do have a pretty big email database when we first were engaged with them. It included mostly people who the co-founders and researchers of this product had met at trade shows and just at various networking events. And then it also included some people who had found them on social media and had liked their pages and then subscribed to their email list. And primarily it's because their blog was really popular for low oxalate recipes designed for people who need to be on a low oxalate diet. So by the time we had been engaged with this company, the product design and package and delivery methods had already been determined by management. So we pretty much just had to create a plan based with, you know, doing the best with what we had. And to give you a better idea of what that looked like, it's sort of like a Crystal Light or a sugar packet is how the enzyme comes in product form. And then external factors, we knew that there was a market for this product based on a technology niche analysis conducted by a research firm. We knew about how much consumers were willing to pay for the product. And then I think really the biggest challenge that caused us to do the most creative problem solving was that this product is entering a highly competitive market regulated very closely by the FDA and the FTC. And while the regulations are necessary and well-intentioned, it really caused us to jump through some hoops with the way we communicate about this. In fact, saying anything related to kidney stones, preventing kidney stones, being the solution for kidney stones, could get us in a lot of trouble because we don't yet have clinical trials to back up those claims. Although the product had been, it had earned the classification generally recognized as safe through the FDA. So we knew through research that it was viable in a simulated stomach environment, although we hadn't done the traditional clinical trials yet. And the company's media coverage up to this point had been limited, so we knew that there was some work to be done in that area as well. So some of this research was actually conducted before our firm was engaged with them in June, but I thought it would be great to include here just to show an understanding of why it was conducted and what type of research it was. And some of the primary questions they wanted to know is, you know, what are these kidney stone sufferers currently doing for prevention and treatment? And what we found is that it was during and immediately after experiencing pain that they promised to do whatever it takes to avoid reoccurrence, as you can imagine. But then after a period of time or a few years pass and the memory of that pain fades, they admit falling back into old dietary habits. So it's really starting to shed some light on the need for a dietary change long term. And then, you know, what would motivate someone to purchase this product? So we had this great survey that had a significant number of respondents showing us that they liked it because it was a natural enzyme, it's safe. However, they're unlikely to purchase it if it costs too much. And the primary reason they're likely to purchase an oxalate-free food is that they don't have to give up foods they like, which in the previous study we saw is a huge factor for sticking with something. So two more questions to share with you. So we wanted to know, how are people already communicating about this issue? And sorry for the groans. My dog is trying to get in on this presentation over here. So we did some research to figure out that use of the terms low oxalate and an oxalate diet had increased over time. And the total number of impressions from social posts was reaching about 300,000 people in a one-year period, which isn't a lot of people, but it's a great niche audience. And then we also wanted to know what would it take for a physician to recommend our product to their patient, because we know the importance of influencers. And most physicians have recommended low oxalate diets for their patients, but they weren't sure about the efficacy of that. And many of them were not satisfied with treatment options that were already available. So it was important for us to emphasize in our messaging, you know, the fact that ours would be the first available and that it works. So moving on to planning and implementation. Our goal was to establish Nafir as the primary resource for people following a low oxalate diet. And our target publics were obviously consumers who are prone to developing kidney stones, or just those looking to enhance their overall kidney and urinary health, since this enzyme promotes both. We also wanted to target the healthcare practitioners, healthcare counselors like nutritionists and dietitians, really all of those influencer groups, food and beverage manufacturers who might partner with us to create oxalate-free type food and drinks, and then grocers, health food stores, and our investors and our employees. So the target public that I decided to go with for this particular presentation were those grocers and health food stores. For whatever reason, the client was really hung up on targeting this public. So this is the one that we really focused on. They had a lot of great marketing initiatives already underway getting to the consumer. So we helped them with this one in particular. And in addition to research earlier slides, in our full PR plan for them, we had included additional online research compiling insights on each of the target publics to help guide development of our strategies and tactics. And looking back, I think we were on the right track, knowing from diffusion of innovation theory that these retailers would be key to trial and adoption of the product by consumers. And what we found in some of our research was, much like food and beverage manufacturers, grocers and health food stores provide products that appeal to industry trends and consumer demand with a desire to carry products that distinguish them from competitors. I think that's sort of an obvious point. And then again, cost is central to consumer conversations about free-from products, so emphasizing value is a key element of their successful retail strategy. Admittedly, when we first developed this plan, we focused a lot on our output objectives. So I went back and revised it. And if we had to do over, this is what I would have written for an outcome objective to really measure the impact of our efforts. And that's by the end of 2017, we would formalize relationships with at least two retail locations. We were on the right track, though. We had the right strategies in place, which were to establish credibility with those publics and educate them about oxalate and the benefits of the low oxalate diet. And then moving on, a big part of our work and our scope of work for this client was creating the messages, because communicating in this environment can be so difficult. So we knew that it was important to give them a great platform that they could then use in all of their marketing and other communication. So we started by drafting a narrative of the product, how it was developed, by who and why. And that really provided us with a great platform for our other key messages. Looking back, I think we did a great job aligning with the message theory of rhetoric and emphasizing choice and strengthening the company's mission to offer nature identical choices for those who struggle with nutritional limitations. We really wanted to focus on reminding audiences of their power over the limitations and not the other way around. And then we also included messages crafted for various stages of product launch and addressed potential issues related to safety and efficacy. And here's a few of those key messages. So Nafure is the first and only known enzyme product available to help maintain a low oxalate diet while enhancing the nutritional value of food and beverages. And Nafure is a novel enzyme product that breaks down oxalate in food and beverages, leaving other minerals available for absorption. It was developed by the team of scientists who are passionate about developing products that provide choices for people with nutritional limitations. A couple more here that I will skip over in the sake of time, but you can always go back and take a look. Now for our tactics to reach that objective, we know that mass media make their greatest impact in the awareness and interest stages, and we knew that it would be important to target these grocers and health food stores through some trade media outlets. So one of our tactics was to secure news coverage that supports brand awareness, credibility, and sales goals. And to do that, we had to identify the appropriate media, develop press materials, and brainstorm story angles. We also knew that this is such a complex topic, and there's so much that we can't say. Sometimes it's better to just have the opportunity to explain it in person. So we wanted to look for opportunities to get in front of these influencers face-to-face. And we wanted to participate in industry events like trade shows, speaking opportunities, and leverage those engagements to also generate publicity. So after researching trade shows and other opportunities, we attended the Soho Expo in late November 2017. It's the annual natural products industry trade show in Orlando, Florida. And if you've never heard of it, you're not alone, because neither had I. It is produced by the Southeast Natural Products Association, which is comprised of members that fit directly with the target public for this objective. And once we found out about this trade show, we secured a list of media who were attending, and our sales director also secured several leads as a result of hosting a booth on the expo floor. We pitched and secured interviews for NIFUR co-founders with media appealing to the target public. And then we also counseled the client on a trade show booth display that would showcase what kind of a high oxalate dinner you could eat with NIFUR versus what you wouldn't. Yeah, right. What you wouldn't be able to eat unless you took it. So in addition to that, we had a very specific B2B sales sheet and other materials to share with these potential business partners. So evaluation, looking back on the plan, I think that, you know, one thing we would have done over, like I mentioned before, is really focusing more on impacts. We did a great job with the outputs. We secured an awesome partnership with Whole Foods Magazine, which is one of the major outlets in this space. They educate and inform retailers on business best practices, health trends, and new products. And without any advertising required, we were able to secure an ongoing contributor partner for their blog. And then we also secured a story in Florida Trend, which is a statewide magazine covering business news in Florida. And finally, we secured an interview with them for the Orlando Sentinel just to provide background so that eventually we could secure a story once either a local retail location was secured or once clinical trials had been completed. And then even though our original plan didn't include an impact objective, we did meet our objective stated here. So by mid-December, one health food store had already purchased a bulk order of NIFUR to sell, and our sales director was in talks with several others as well. So to give you an idea of the budget, unfortunately, I don't know what the total budget was, but I can tell you what we spent for agency staff time across 6 months, which was about $30,000. I know some other factors that they would have had to consider for costs would have been exhibit registration and travel, their display materials, press kit, website redesign, digital marketing and advertising agency fees for another firm that helped with a lot of their like AdWords and things with their website. And finally, just to provide a high-level overview of when all of this took place, you can see the bulk of our time was spent in PR plan development and approvals and then getting ready for our trade show, researching which trade show we should attend and preparing for that, and then following up with media after the fact. And that's it for me.
Well, fantastic. Thank you. Mira, Karen?
Karen, do you want to go first? I have a lot of thoughts on this one, but I'll let you go first.
Sure. Great presentation. The way you worked through the planning process and the implementation was excellent. Starting with the problem or the opportunity, what was it? Which direction will you take it to? The publics, the awareness, the attitudes, in your planning stages, and then you went through how do we do it, the tactics, the chart that you used for the research, very detailed, very good. And then at the end, obviously, you tied back your objectives back to the evaluation. Did you accomplish your objectives? Did you, you know, what you, in, you came, you know, full circle as you should. Very good presentation.
Thank you.
My thoughts on this, I'll start with the problem statement. And the panel may have, you know, when you finally take this to panel, they may have different opinions on it. I kind of thought that the problem statement, there's a line in there about NIFUR that sounded so much like the messaging. I would just caution to try to be as objective as possible with the problem statement, especially, you know, how are you presenting information that actually proves that NIFUR is the first and only enzyme product? You know, unless you're presenting that type of information to prove it, you may want to kind of walk that back a little bit, and that sounds so markety, messagey in the problem statement. Other than that, I would have liked to see in the outcomes, getting the placement alone in the newspaper, you don't have to stop there in your analysis. You could look at the articles and really do a content analysis to say, okay, did the messaging really end up in the article? And so that's just taking the evaluation just another step, because you don't have to stop at the actual placement itself. And then I think sometimes with the budget, it can be very hard, especially when you're not like personally overseeing it yourself. But as much as possible, if you can try to estimate what the actual costs are, you know, however you can, I think that it's at least worth a good effort to do that. And even if you don't know it, anything you can do to try to research how much those things would possibly be and to estimate that budget, I think, if you know, I would like to see just some additional, you know, no, I didn't have the actual budget, but I know that, you know, a press kit, you know, market rate would be this, a website redesign could cost this, just some type of effort with that. That's the only feedback I would have. Really great plan. I really enjoyed the Gantt chart and the thoroughness with this.
I have a question for you. On your objective, you list by the end of 2017 if you're formalized relationships with at least two retail locations. Did you have a specific geographic area for that?
We started in Florida just because that's where the company is headquartered. And we were able to, we did start in Florida. They were able to form relationships with people in Florida. And it was also much easier to do that because of attendees at the trade show. Since it is a regional trade show, most of them were also from the state.
Okay. I didn't know if you were targeting a specific area or just any two retail locations. So
I think they would have taken just about anything, but it worked out that it was something in close proximity.
Okay.
All right. Well, fantastic. Thank you very much. I'm just going to touch on some of the things that we know we have coming up. We still have about a good 10 minutes or so for this session. I'd like to be able to come back to maybe asking Amarin and Karen a few more questions. But just so you know, for next week, we are going to be going over managing relationships. We'll have Adrian Leon and George Coach. And let's see, Mike, I guess you'll be doing your case study next week. And Angel Jackson, and we'll have Nadia Vanderhoof and David Hashigan. We're going to have Dave. He's going to be having a question for us. But again, we are looking for more volunteers, though. These times do come up pretty quickly, so we still need presenters, as well as people that want to provide their notes. It would be fantastic if you're able to provide that. You know, that would be a great, Mary Ellen brought up, how about Jessamy shows a slide she skipped. Jessamy, would you mind if we go back to those slides?
Sure.
Okay, so this is the part, y'all, that I did not actually prepare, so we're going to wing this.
I'm going to let you drive from here.
Okay. We're going to go back to... There we go. Yeah, we need budget, right? Yeah. Okay, so I think I just was starting into the study guide. It gives some ideas of how you can make decisions and the some tools that you can use to make decisions. And we already talked about SWOT analysis in the research portion, but This also helps you midway through the plan and in other parts of PR leadership as you are helping to kind of drill down what's important and what's not important to your organization. And then there's a couple more that are highlighted in the study guide. One of them is Porter's Five Forces, which I frankly did not really understand. So I think I'm going to have to go back and explain how that works. The other two are kind of self-explanatory, just going, if I do this, what would happen? And then the drill down technique is for those of us who are visual learners, breaking the problem into smaller and smaller parts until the answer becomes more clear. Then I talked a little bit about how businesses are organized. I think we've all understand that for-profits are your sort of regular companies and how they differ from nonprofits, usually charities, and I gave some examples, the YMCA, the Red Cross, that they are not in business necessarily to make a profit for owners. They oftentimes have a charitable mission. I think this is right. For the not-for-profit organization, that they may actually wind up generating revenue, but the revenue is usually recycled back into their operations instead of going to shareholders. And so that was something that I think a lot of people may be confused about, that nonprofits and not-for-profits sometimes do wind up with additional money, a surplus, but that's not something that they keep or distribute to owners. A little bit about how businesses are organized, whether it's a sole proprietorship, you know, you own the company and you're liable for its debts, or whether you go into partnership with somebody, or whether you have a large corporation. I didn't realize that there's a concept called double taxation, meaning the profits are taxed and your shareholders' share is also taxed. And then a limited liability company is sort of a hybrid of the two. C corporation and S corporation, I won't spend a lot of time on this. It's just two different kinds of corporations and the way that you corporations decide to organize themselves. And the reason why it's important for us to understand how businesses are organized or choose to organize themselves, that it gives us an idea of how they make decisions and what's important to them. How its leaders make decisions and what's important to the company. And so it helps us, say you are hired to do a plan for them, you can really look at some of their financial documents and figure out a little bit about their bottom line and also analyze your own organization as well. Centralized and decentralized decision making. So centralized decision making is that all the decisions are the top people, remember the CEO's cabinet people, vertically structured up and down. Decentralized means that your decisions are made across your operating units instead of just the people at the top. That's horizontal decision making, which is also on the next slide. But sometimes it's faster if you don't have to send everything up to the top and wait for a ruling. This way, sometimes your individual units may be empowered to make decisions on their own. And then again, we talked about the horizontal and vertical. So horizontal means you buy a company that is similar to yours or sort of next to your strengths. Right. So Facebook acquires Instagram. That makes sense. That it's sort of near their strengths. Vertical is obviously up and down. So you start buying your supply chains or your suppliers. So some examples there. I think we start this. I know there's one more slide that I skipped. Now I'm going to find it. I hope it was. I missed one, but here we go. Some information about balance sheets, financial statements that companies have to put out. Section 14? I see a question in the chat. This one. I did solicitation of proxies, meaning there are rules about when you can talk about or issue information to get people to for their proxy votes. It's kind of complicated, and I have to say I don't totally understand it. But anyway, there's something called a proxy period that you're not supposed to be talking with. So that's sort of under the whole blackout, gag rule, quiet period that probably I'm going to have to nail down before I take this test, right? And I think we were on, tell me if we need to stop. Oh, you know what? I think we're going backward. I'm sorry, y'all. Yep. I think we're doing, wish there was a way to do this faster. I'm sorry. 1, 2, 3. I think we were doing the financial statements. Yeah. So your balance sheet. You know what I did that was super helpful was, again, go online and find some companies who have actually had to file some of these and sat there with the book and looked at what the balance sheet actually looks like so that it's sort of a snapshot, right? It always is going to balance. And then your profit and loss statement, your income statement, you can kind of read it like a video from top to bottom, which is kind of cool. And then the cash flow statement shows how your money is coming in and coming out. I'm thinking that that might be kind of like a checking account showing your information going in and out. Let's see if it can move here. Oh, I guess that's it. So here are my sources if you want to look at those. The AP style guide was super helpful as well. And then I went to Investopedia, which has been very helpful. Some of these online sites that just break it down into really short nuggets to help shed some light on some of these topics because they're kind of complicated. And I found that even more helpful to complement some of the other readings that we got. Anyway, those, I believe, are all the ones that I skipped.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jessamine. That was very thorough notes. All right. And we're going to go to the end here. If there's anybody that would like to volunteer for the coming up classes, I see the one for 424. I believe is going to be focused on case problem presentations. Please check in with Michael. He will have a little bit more information on that one in particular for that particular date. All right. So, Amara, Karen, any final words for everybody?
Amara?
I would just say that, you know, going through the modules and, you know, it can seem like a lot, but you really have to enjoy the process of earning your APR. It can seem very overwhelming, especially when life happens. You're juggling career and family and friends and all this stuff. And to be able to focus on this is meaningful. So please enjoy this process for yourself and your own professional growth. I managed to get engaged, move across country, find a new job, all while earning the APR. So I am living proof that you can do it. And I did happen to pass the exam on the first try, even though I had the worst testing location possible. But I just want to encourage everybody to just enjoy the process and really let it seep in. And I'm happy to mentor and engage you on Twitter, on I Am Amara, and you can find me on LinkedIn. But, yeah, enjoy the process, and you will look back on this and say, this was the best thing, you know, I ever did.
Excellent. Thank you. And Karen?
The only other thing I'd add besides saying to enjoy the process is to make sure you carve the time out for yourself. It's not something that you should do, you know, in between cooking dinner and setting the table, or in between, you know, waiting for your child to go to a soccer game. It's time that you need to actually carve out for yourself, because when you get through the process, you're going to find it very meaningful and very beneficial on multiple levels. And it's not something that you can kind of squeeze in, 5 minutes here and 5 minutes there. Take the time for yourself to actually absorb the information and to learn and to, as Amira said, enjoy it.
Fantastic. Well, that's all the time we have tonight. Thank you so much to our facilitators, to our presenters, to everybody for even just taking the time to chime in. Thank you all very much. We'll see you next Tuesday. Again, if you have any questions, please reach out to Michael. He should be back next week. Have a good one, everyone.